Hi everyone, I'm the bit before the theme music, and all I have to do is be here before the theme music, and then I can get back to drinking, vaping, and watching TV. So, yeah, run the theme music, I'm off to get drunk. Nice!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, says me, my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. So, we're going to go straight into it with the interactive bit. Just a little update. I don't know if I get any new listeners this time of year. It'd be hard to believe that the first episode someone listens to is this one, but you never know. So, the interactive bit, unlike most podcasts where you're just sitting there listening to someone, this podcast's nothing like that, because with this podcast, you get to interact with me, only for a little bit at the start of the show. So this is the interactive bit. Commence. Get out. And scene. That was a very short one and a little bit rude, but it got it over and done with. And that's the important thing. Got to get these things out of the way. I don't think I've got any housekeeping. Let me think. Nah, pretty much I've been sitting around scratching myself and doing Easter. Doing Easter? Watching Easter? Having Easter? What do you do with Easter? Eating eggs. Chocolate eggs. I got two this year. My wife didn't get me one. I got her one. That makes me look better than her. Having said that, when it was Valentine's Day, I didn't get her anything. She got me a card and a present. Mistakes were made. Let's not dwell on it. Anyway, Easter was good. Do you know what? We got a bit of an Easter tradition where on Easter Day in the morning, we put on the Tale of the Bunny Picnic, you know, the Jim Henson special. If you've never seen that, you should check it out. It's good. It's got nothing to do with Easter, but it's got bunnies in it. And we like it. Anyway, that's not important. What's important is the show, which is starting now with this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, there are literally hundreds of versions of A Christmas Carol. And this episode, I'm going to talk about one that a lot of people think is the best. Well, I've got news for you, boys and girls. It ain't. Or maybe it is. We're going to find out. It is the 1951 version of A Christmas Carol starring Alastair Sim as Ebenezer Scrooge. So, I'm going to run through it. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm only going to focus on the bad bits. That's right. This episode, I'm just going to be talking about what is wrong with the 1951 version of A Christmas Carol. Now, I'm not going to bother mentioning any of the actors, okay, apart from Alastair Sim. I've already done that. I'm not going to do it again. Maybe next episode, because next episode, I'm going to spoil it for you. Spoiler alert. Next episode, I'm going to be talking about the good points of it. But this one, I thought deserved two whole episodes. But right now, boys and girls, I'm pulling no punches. And I'm going to explain why A Christmas Carol 1951 is a big steaming pile of dog stuff. I saved it at the end there, didn't I? Thought I was going to say shit, but I didn't. I just said stuff. Right, so it opens up. Right, the first scene is him at the stock exchange. What's that about? It says clearly in the book, once upon a time, on a Christmas Eve, in his office. That's how it starts. And it starts the exchange, and he's talking to a couple of men. And I'll tell you what, he's a bit rude to those two men as well. For no reason. I don't mind people being rude if they got a reason. Well, I do mind it. You know, try not to be rude. Let's be polite to each other. But he's just rude to them. And, well, it's rude, isn't it? Yeah. Then he leaves and there's a bloke comes up to him called Samuel Wilkins and he owes Scrooge 20 quid. And he's like, could I just ease off paying you? And Scrooge is like, no. As the scene goes, it's not a bad scene. But it ain't in the book. I'm a purist. And they've just thrown in two scenes that ain't in the book before we've got anywhere. Don't worry, boys and girls, the next bit is in the book, but it's in the wrong order. So he's walking back and there's three kids outside his office and they're singing A Christmas Carol. Well, one of them's singing, one of them's playing like a penny whistle, and the other one's trying to get some money off Scrooge, and he tells them to clear off. Well, I see what they were doing there. They were doing a twist on the bit in the book where the little boy is singing at Scrooge's keyhole. But that's later. This is earlier. They've moved it around. Do you know why? I don't. And here's something else that's wrong with it. The boy is singing Silent Night. Well, I can tell you, boys and girls, Silent Night wasn't translated into English until 1863, and this is set in the 1840s. So, another glaring mistake that's probably made you furious. So far, we're not doing great. Then we get the two portly gentlemen, and they're waiting for him in the office. Well, that doesn't happen, does it? And I'll tell you another thing. They come in after Fred in the book, but in this one, they're before Fred. And you want to know something else about the portly gentlemen? They ain't portly. They're both quite slim, and they clearly look after themselves. So, that was naff. With that bit, the dialogue's fairly the same. So, I'm not going to pick holes in the dialogue if it is roughly the same, okay? I can't expect it to be word for word from the book. So they leave, and Fred comes in, and the dialogue is very different. Very different. And also, there's no line where he says anyone who goes around Merry Christmas on their lips should be buried with a stake of holly through their heart. So that's not there, and that's a short scene. And then they've added a scene where Tiny Tim is looking at toys in the shop windows, and Mrs. Cratchit comes up to him and says, come on, let's go home. Where's that come from? That's not in the book. Who do you think you are? Adding these scenes out of nowhere. Then, when Bob Cratchit leaves, there is no slide on Cornhill. Yeah, no slide at all, no ice slide. You know, he runs along and slides down a slide. That's not there. And also, he don't go home and play Blind Man's Buff with his family. I mean, admittedly, most versions do leave that out. But still. But now we're going to skip on a bit. Here's a bit. Scrooge goes home. He sees Jacob in the door. That's fine. They did a good job of that. I'm accepting it. Then he goes indoors, right? Here's the thing. He goes indoors. It's well lit. The whole place is well lit. In the book it says it's dark, and he has to light a dip, which is a candle. And this one, are you ready for this? There's already a candle lit on a table by the door. And he picks it up. Doesn't have to light it. He picks up a lit candle. When we see the candle, it doesn't look like it's burnt down that much. I don't know when it was lit. I'm guessing he didn't light it before he left. The point in the book is that he uses a dip candle because dips are really cheap. He's got a rather expensive looking candle, and it's already lit. And here's another thing. It ain't the candle that's making it well lit in that area, because he's walking up the stairs. There's a shadow of him on the wall and the candle. Well, a candle's not going to cast a shadow of itself, is it now? No, it's not. Then he goes in his chambers, and now he's got two shadows up against the wall behind him, and also the candle. Shadow of the candle. So now we've got at least two lights plus a candle. Where's it all coming from? Why is he bothering with a candle if he's got two other lights going on? I'm already furious, and we've barely got into it. This version is awful. Right. We don't get Marley's face in the fireplace. Most versions don't have that. Some do. This one doesn't. Then, you know when all the bells start ringing? All the bells in the house start ringing, yeah? Well, it says clearly in the book that the bell swings softly to begin with and then really starts rattling. Well, in this one, it doesn't even move at all. The bells don't move. They're all ringing. The grandfather clock's going off. Everything's ringing. But nothing's moving. I don't know. And then Marley comes in and the dialogue is altered for no reason, because they stick quite close to it at times, and then they make a little detour for no reason. They could have just used the dialogue from the book. I don't know why they chose to do that. Tell you what, I didn't choose to do it. Then we get the ghosts in the street. And here's a question for you. What the f*** is Bob Cratchit doing as one of the ghosts in the street? I'm not joking. Watch it. He's one of the ghosts. Like the spirits, you know, the spirits that are all desperate to help the poor lady. One of them's Bob Cratchit. I'm not joking. Have a look. It's there. Right, that's fine. We're going to move on now, okay? We're up to chapter 2 of the book. In comes the ghost of Christmas past. I'm not going to go on about the fact that he looks nothing like the description in the book, because it's very hard to do the description in the book. So what they've done is fine. I'll accept it. He goes back to the school he was at, right? Fan comes in, and we don't get to see him lonely. Right, that's the whole point of it, is him there lonely and all he's got is his books. And in the novel, it talks about all the things he's reading in his books and imagining. We don't get to see any of that. Okay, I'm not bothered about not getting to see any of that. That's not a big deal. But what is a big deal is he's not very lonely for very long, because Fan turns up after maybe about 20 odd seconds and she's older than him. Well, that ain't right, is it? You know it's not right. So I'm not sure how old Scrooge is meant to be at this point. He could be in his teens, late teens, possibly, well, not late teens, but mid-teens, I'm guessing, not 15, possibly 16. I don't think 16. I think younger than 16, right? But there he is. That's it. The actor, I'm going to tell you the actor, his name's George Cole. He's very famous in the UK, he's dead now. He plays young Scrooge. He would have been about 26 when this was filmed. I don't know how old he's meant to be playing, but remember that, okay, 26. Right, so we've done the bit about Fan, okay, she's clearly older than him. Now, because we only get the one scene here of Fan coming to collect him and take him home, like, we don't get the previous years when he's all lonely. And the point of this scene is Scrooge is watching it and he starts to feel guilty because he's looking at a young boy and it reminds him of the young boy that was carol singing outside his office. And he thinks, oh, I would like to have given that boy some money. That's not mentioned at all. The whole point of this is clearly that Fan's come to get him. Then we get Fezziwig's party. That's fine. I'll accept that. But who should be there but Alice? Who's Alice, you're thinking? There was a song in the UK that goes...
I don't know why she's leaving or where she's gonna go. I guess she's got her reasons, but I just don't wanna know. 'Cause for 24 years I've been living next door to Alice.
And then a guy called Roy Chubby Brown ad-libbed a bit to that. Well, he goes,
'Cause for 24 years I've been living next door to Alice.
Alice? Who the fuck is Alice?
And then they re-released it, like, 20-odd years after it originally came out, with Roy Chubby Brown singing that bit, and it did really well in the charts. Anyway, that's my question to you. Alice, who the f*** is Alice? Well, it's Belle, isn't it? But for some reason, they've changed the name to Alice. And they do this a lot, not just in this version, obviously. Lots of versions insist on changing Belle's name. There was one where she's called Isabel. I thought, well, I can accept that. I shouldn't have to accept it, but I can accept it. But Alice, what's that all about? And there's other ones. Emily, I remember her being called in one of them. Anyway, let's not get into that. We get this whole added scene where he's there chatting to Belle or Alice. Call her what you want. She's not going to answer. She's probably dead now. He's giving her a ring and talking about getting married. So the next scene is obviously them splitting up. No, it's not, because we get this whole new story about Scrooge's life as a businessman. It starts off with him working for Fezziwig, and then this guy called Jorkin comes in who wants to buy Fezziwig's off him. Fezziwig don't want to sell, and then Jorkin goes and talks to Scrooge and offers him a job where he'd earn twice as much money. Then we get a scene where Fan is dying. Well, we knew Fan died giving birth to young Fred. And we actually get to see it this time. She's there in bed dying. And then as Scrooge leaves, he's furious at who we can only assume is Fan's husband. And he's annoyed at hearing the baby cry. And then after he's gone, Fan is on her deathbed going,
Ebenezer, promise me you'll take care of my boy. Promise me.
Well, he's already gone. So he didn't hear her ask that. Actually, this is another bit. Have a listen to this bit. Listen to this.
Oh, you're going to get well again, Fan. Fan, you're going to get well again.
Yeah, good luck with that. Then we get a scene where he's taking the job with Jorkin and he first meets Jacob Marley. That's something. Then Fezziwigs is bought out and Scrooge and Marley are going there when they're changing the sign from Fezziwigs to Scrooge and Marley's. And one of the old staff is there, like, saying, oh, you know, will I keep my job? And Scrooge is like, how much are you getting paid? And the guy says, 5 shillings a week. And Scrooge says, you can stay on for 4 shillings a week. Well, he's a tight git, that's to be expected. Then, finally, we get the scene with Belle or Alice and them splitting up. And they just keep the dialogue fairly the same. But, in the book, she walks off and leaves him. In this version, he walks off and leaves her. See, these changes they've made are ridiculous. And there's no later scene. We don't see her older after she's married someone else. None of that's in here. Not at all. So then there's this board meeting with Jorkin, Scrooge, Marley and all the other board members. And it turns out Jorkin has been embezzling all the profits. So Scrooge and Marley are like, look, we can bail him out so there's no scandal and the share price doesn't plummet. But we want to buy up to 51% of the shares. And Jorkin's like, oh ho.
In short, gentlemen, if you wish to save the fair name of the company by accepting their generous offer, they become the company.
And they're sitting there looking smug because they know they can buy the business. And that's what they do. Then we get a scene which is much later. So I should have said, right, that last scene was the first scene where we saw Alastair Sim playing Scrooge. So up until that point, it was still George Cole. Then we get an interesting scene that is set 7 years before the film is actually set, and that is Mrs. Dilber goes to tell Scrooge that Marley is dying, and Scrooge is like, what, he expects me to go and see him, does he? Well, I'll get along if I can, after I've finished work. And then, when it turns 7 o'clock, he's finished work, he's there, and the room is well lit. And I'm looking at it, thinking, there's a shadow of that lamp on his desk. And I'm thinking, that clearly isn't casting that shadow, because the light is obviously coming behind the lamp. He turns the lamp down, and all the light goes out. It's almost as if it was magic. It's almost as if it was lit from another source. Anyway, he goes to see Marley, and Marley is laying on his deathbed, and it's like he's trying to repent. And he's saying, we were wrong, Scrooge, we were wrong. And that bothers me, because in the book, the whole point is, he realises after he's died that he's been a dick all his life. Still, that's what they went with. Anyway, that's the end of the Ghost of Christmas Past bit. Then we get the Ghost of Christmas Present. And when they first meet, the ghost is laughing away really loudly, right? But his mouth isn't moving. What's that about? Badly dubbed, isn't it? Very badly. And the dialogue is very different as well when they first meet. Very different to what's in the book. So the first scene we get outside of Scrooge's bedchambers is the bit where they go and visit the miners. You know the bit? Yeah. They go there first before, like, there's no street scenes. Christmas Day on the street, we just get the miners. There's no scene with a lighthouse and there's no ships at sea or any of the other bits after that at all. Yeah. The Cratchit scene is alright, actually, though. That's not too bad. But there is some bits where Tiny Tim's a little bit annoying. Have a listen to this.
It'll be the finest pudding in the whole of London this Christmas, and the goose will be the finest goose.
Just a bit annoying, isn't it? Really? Then we get the scene at Fred's, and there's no games. No games, I tells you. There's no blind man's buff, where Topper, you know, is trying to touch up the plump sister. None of that. None of that at all. And definitely no game, yes or no game, where they've got to work out that Scrooge is a git. That's not in it either. No games. No games. Disappointed in that. What we do get, however, is an extra scene with Alice. That's right. Alice. Remember? Used to be called Belle. For some reason, she changed her name. We get this scene where she's helping some poor person. Here's the thing. She has barely aged. Now, don't forget, when she was with Scrooge as a young man, it was George Cole playing young Scrooge. George Cole was playing Scrooge when he was at school, about 16 years old. Same guy playing him when he's with Belle. I don't know how old they are. We'll say early 20s, all right? Now, we've got old Scrooge, Alistair Sim, who was 50, don't you know, younger than me. I tell you what, he looks a damn sight older. Looking at that makes me feel pretty damn good about myself. Anyway, Belle's there, looking pretty much the same as she did when she was going out with George Cole. What's that about? I don't know. I do not know, because this version is terrible. Right, that's pretty much it for the Ghost of Christmas Present. So now we get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. They have gnawed up the whole order. Completely gnawed it up, I tell you. Right, let me start. First place they go, Bob Cratchit's. That's not one of the last places they go. Peter's there, reading what I believe is some scripture stuff. And it ain't the same as the bit he's reading out in the book. Don't know why they changed it. Oh yes, I do know, because they're assholes. Then we actually get to see the ghost's head slash face, because the cloth he's got over him goes almost transparent at one point. He turns his head. You get a good look at him. If you knew that person, you'd be like, I know him. Yeah. You get a real good look at the person's face. Not a great look, but a good look. And then they go to Old Joe's. Yes, yeah, so it's like they've reversed the order. It really is like they've reversed the order. Now, I can't pick any fault with the scene with Old Joe, because I think they do a really good job of that. Really good job. But then we get one scene with the businessmen in the street. Well, not in the street. They're actually at the stock exchange. And it's only two men. In the book, it says there's a knot of businessmen, suggesting it's a number, I'm guessing, 4 to 5 people. In this one, it's only two men. And it's just a very short scene. And also, in the book, there is two scenes of businessmen chatting. In this one, it's only the one. There's no bit where there's a body under the sheet. And Scrooge is like, oh, I would lift it up, but I can't lift it up. So I'm not going to lift it up. Also, there's no scene with Caroline and husband. And that's the bit where there's a couple that owe loads of money to Scrooge, but because he's dead, they're relieved and they're happy. And I was thinking about that. I thought they could have used the guy from earlier. You remember Samuel Wilkins, the bloke where they added the extra scene at the start? Well, why add the extra scene at the start when you could be having proper scenes later on? I don't know. I don't know. And that's pretty much it. But what annoys me about the way they've messed up all those scenes, doing it in reverse order, is the whole bit where Scrooge is like, you know, who is this man they're all talking about? Although actually that almost does work, thinking about it, because he's there and the guys are talking. Yeah, let's not get into it. Then he wakes up, and this annoys me, because Mrs. Dilber, I'm guessing she's his housekeeper, she comes in with his breakfast. And that doesn't happen in the book. It doesn't happen at all. And he's like singing and dancing and being all happy. It's very similar dialogue to in the book, but in the book he's talking to himself. In this one, he's talking to Mrs. Dilber. Now he starts behaving like a weirdo, and at one point he goes, oh, I must stand on my head, and he tries to stand on his head in a chair. Mrs. Dilber throws her apron over her head and runs off down the stairs. Scrooge chases after her and gives her a guinea as a Christmas present. A guinea. Now here's the thing. They stopped producing guinea coins in 1914, 30 years before this came out. Now, a guinea, boys and girls, was a pound and a shilling. So really, it was 20, because 20 shillings to a pound, so it's 21 shillings. And he says to her, how much do I pay you? And she says, 2 shillings a week. He says, I'm going to up it to 10. Not only is he just given her 10 and a half weeks' pay as a Christmas bonus, but now he's multiplied the amount he pays her for whatever she does by 5 times. Yeah. And then she runs off saying this.
Bullshit, Uncle! Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge! In keeping with the situation!
Now, the phrase, Bob's your uncle, comes from the Prime Minister, Robert Cecil, who gave the job of the Chief Secretary of Ireland to his nephew, Arthur Balfour. So the idea is, a bit of nepotism there, Bob's your uncle, you're going to get a nice job. And that happened in 1887. Well, this is set in 1843. Explain that to me. You can't, can you? Of course you can't. You've got no skills. So anyway, he gives Mrs. Dilber this coin. Oh, that's interesting as well. He reaches in his dressing gown pocket and pulls out his little money bag. Who carries a money bag to go to sleep in? Not me. Well, I do actually, but I've got reasons for that, but I don't want to go into it. But most people don't, do they? Anyway, then he looks out at a boy in the street. That's pretty good. I'm not going to knock that. But the only other scene we get on Christmas Day, there's no bit where he's walking down the street wishing people Merry Christmas. He doesn't go to church like he does in the book. And he doesn't see the portly gentleman to give him some money. Do you remember the ones? Yeah, the ones that weren't portly. Doesn't see them. And it annoys me when you don't get that scene. Really annoys me. And then he goes to Fred. And this annoys me. Because in the book it says he like walks up and down a load of times before he gets the guts to go up and ring the bell. Well, in this one, he don't care. He just walks straight up there and he's a little bit nervous when he goes through into the living room. And that is a nice scene. I will give him that. Yeah. Then you get the end scene. Well, actually, there's 2 end scenes in this one. So you get the end scene where he's there with Bob Cratchit and he makes a bit of a joke about, I won't stand for it anymore. I'm going to raise your salary. Hooray! That's nice. And then we get another scene on the street where he sees Tiny Tim and he's saying hello to people and he's all lovely. And that's fine. I didn't mind that extra scene. We'll accept that. So there you go, boys and girls. As you can tell, it's one of the worst versions that's ever been made. But don't worry, because next episode, I will explain to you why that is one of the best versions ever made. It's all going to work itself out in the end, kids. Don't you worry about a thing. But right now, we're doing this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Salzburg, Austria? It is the perfect location for celebrating a little Christmas in April, since you can find the Christmas and Easter store right in the heart of historic Salzburg. There you can find handcrafted items and creative festive decorations from Austria, Germany, and Italy. The shop is known for its exclusive rare baubles made of mouth-blown glass. In addition, just down the road is another year-round family-owned holiday store known as Christmas in Salzburg. that will get you in the spirit with its renowned frilly ornaments and genuine hand-painted, scratched, glued, engraved, punched, and decorated eggshells. The products here are constantly being refined and improved, with new decorations being developed and refined for sale. These stores are both located in the UNESCO World Heritage listed Old Town that served as the backdrop for the film The Sound of Music. With roots dating back to the 15th century, this area in Salzburg is known for its Baroque architecture, medieval charm, and narrow Gerritegas shopping street. Now, if you know of another destination with double the shops and double the seasons, you yodel it to Jack, he'll herd it to me, and together we'll tell you where to find Christmas around the world.
Another blinder, wasn't it? Somewhere else for us to go. So, good work there. I feel like I should get a map of the globe and put pins in all the places that... No, forget it. Can't be bothered. Right, thanks though, Bob. Great work. Now we're going to do this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Well, boys and girls, do you remember last episode I scored a measly 4 points in the quiz? 4 points, don't you know? Well, these are everyone else's scores from last episode. With 3 points, we've got Jennifer Kay, Todd and Mary Pulte. They both scored 3. John Gomez and Pamela Wooten. Thanks for that, Pamela Wooten. She's actually put in her email that she only got 3 points, so I wouldn't feel so bad. And I appreciate that, Pamela Wooten. Pamela. Thank you, Pamela. With 4 points matching me, we have Kevin Church, Sean Sotka from the Christmas Podcast, Brian McGloin and Jack Umberforth. And then lording it up over me, and I don't know how they all... Those questions were hard, man. They were really hard. With 5 points, we've got Martin Goodman, Frank Talley, Nettie Thibault, Stephen Beach, Mike Westphal and Caroline Cole. And with 6 points, sitting on his throne, gazing down at us, was Benji Pearson. Well done, Benji. Well done indeed. Do you know what? I'm just going to say this now. Before we get into the quiz, I just want to say one more thing. All of those names, I recognised every single one of them. And it would be nice if I got some new names. Now, I've got 4 listeners, but more than 4 people sent in their scores. I don't know how that works out. I'm no mathematician. If I was, I could tell you how it works. But I've got my 4 listeners. But wouldn't it be nice if I had a different name to read out next episode? You know, if you're a different name, if you're not one of those people and you're listening to this, send me a score. It'll take you seconds. Unless you're like really bad at typing. And then it might take you minutes. But that's all. Anyway, this is this episode's quiz. And it ain't that easy either. I've told you this before. I'm going to tell you again. I don't want to tell you. I'm just doing it anyway. The book is set out in 3 batches of questions, all on the same subject. This is the 3rd batch on food. Okay, here they come. Question number 1. Denmark's Rislemond is similar to which English desert? Now, I didn't know we had deserts in the UK. I thought, because we've got quite a nice climate, lots of rain, I didn't know we had any deserts. But it turns... Oh, hang on, wait a minute. There's 2 S's. Which English dessert? Sorry. Which English dessert is like Rislemond? Question number 2. In which country are Ping Anguo or peace apples gifted on Christmas Eve? Ping Anguo. Hope I said that right. Next one. What special cake would you eat in Mexico on Dia de los Reyes? Dia de los Reyes. I could tell you what that means in English. I'm not going to because I'm a badass. That's right. Okay, next question. What seeds are found in the Irish seed cake that's popular at Christmas? Next one. What sort of cake is traditionally served in Jamaica at Christmas? What cake? What type of cake? tell me now. Or don't tell me, but think about the answer. Right, next one. Which country serves a Yule board at Christmas? It's with a J, but I believe it's Yule board. Which country serves a Yule board at Christmas? Okay, next one. What type of fish is bacalao, a Mexican Christmas delicacy? Delicacy, kids. And it's a fish. But what type of fish? Right. Oh, we've got another fish question. In which European country would you be if you ate fish soup and fried carp at Christmas? Which country would you be in? Next one. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to try and read this out. Lantulatico. Not one too bad, was it? Let's try that again. Lantulatico. That's better. A type of... I say it's better. I don't know. I don't know how I'm supposed to say it. It just rolled off the tongue a little bit easier. That's all. It's a type of Swede casserole. It's popular in which country? Well, they've given that away, haven't they? Swede. It's obviously Sweden, isn't it? That's a bit unfair. That's a bit too easy, that one. Okay, next one. Oh, hang on. Swede. A type of Swede casserole. They mean the vegetable. Yeah, do you know what Swede is? You might call it a rutabaga. I've got a mate from Sweden, and I wanted to start calling him Rudy, because rutabaga means Swede. But I don't think he'd like it, so I didn't bother. And the last one. Where is Christmas Eve, sometimes referred to as Soan's Nicht, Nicht, N-I-C-H-T, after the meal made of soaked oat husks? I didn't know oats had tusks. They don't. It says husks. Oat husks. Well, that was quick, wasn't it? Rattled through those 10. Let's see what these answers are, shall we? Right, question number one. Denmark's Rizalemond is similar to which English dessert? I've talked about this. I have talked about this before. I think in the episode where I was talking about the food that people leave out for Santa. It might not have been the episode, but I did anyway. It's rice pudding. There you go. In which country? Ping Anguo, or peace apples gifted on Christmas Eve. That's in China. I didn't know they celebrated Christmas much in China. Next one. What special cakes would you eat in Mexico on Dia de los Reyes? Well, I can tell you, Dia is day, de of, los is the, and Reyes is king. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, over Easter I watched King of Kings. It's a biblical epic where Jeffrey Hunter plays Jesus Christ. I was reading a bit about it on IMDb, and the poster, the Spanish poster came up, and it said on it, Reya dos Reyes. Yeah, King of Kings. So that's how I knew that King... Yeah, anyway. What kind of cakes? You ready? Three Kings cake. Or Rosca de Reyes. Yeah, Three Kings cake. Who's going to get that? You might have. I didn't. Next one. What seeds are found in the Irish seed cake that's popular at Christmas? Well, the only one I could think of was poppy seeds. You know, like in a poppy seed muffin. But the correct answer was caraway seeds. And I've heard of caraway seeds. Never had one. But I'm aware. Actually, I probably have. I probably had loads of them, and I love them. I don't know if I love them. I don't. Can we move on? I got it wrong. Next one. What sort of cake is traditionally served in Jamaica at Christmas? Well, of course, I said ginger cake. The answer was fruitcake. Yeah. Which is popular, like, all around the world. You know, like Christmas cake in the UK, that's a fruitcake. Fruitcake in the US, that's a fruitcake. Anyway. My next one. Which country serves a Yule board at Christmas? I guessed Sweden, and you know what? I was right for a change, kids. I got it right. Here's a couple of interesting facts for you. Well, it's one fact, two things. There's two words that we use in English that are directly taken from the Swedish language, and they are smorgasbord and ombudsman. You learnt something today, kids. Okay, next, it's got nothing to do with Christmas, though. Okay, next one. What type of fish is bacalao, a Mexican Christmas delicacy? Well, I guessed cod. And you know what? I was right. Yeah, finally, one of my guesses pays off. Right, next one. In which European country would you be if you ate fish soup and fried carp at Christmas? Well, I guessed Poland. Because one of my daughter's friends, her mum is from Poland. And she was telling my wife about how they'd get a carp. I thought it was a carp, a fish. And they'd have it in the bath in the week leading up to Christmas. And then they'd eat it on Christmas Day. That's got nothing to do with this question, because the answer was the Czech Republic. kids. The Czech Republic. Didn't get that. Okay, next one. Lantulatico, a type of Swede casserole, is popular in which country? Do you know what? I thought, it sounds like a Scandinavian. Should we go Norway? And I thought, no, let's go Finland. And I was right. Couldn't believe it. Got that one. Hooray for me. And the last one. Where is Christmas Eve sometimes referred to as Samhain's Nicht after the meal made of soaked oat husks? I thought Nicht, that sounds like Stillich Nicht, you know, Silent Night. Yeah, so I thought Germany. Well, it ain't. Blimmin' Scotland, isn't it? Yeah. So, I scored a massive 4 points. Exactly the same as last week. And I'm not happy about it. In fact, I'm furious about it. I'm disappointed, actually. Not furious. You know, I'm not going to go smashing anything. I am. I'm going to smash up the whole blooming house. Furious. So, yeah, I bet you beat me. Probably didn't. But you're probably going to send in a number higher than 4. Just to spite me. Well, that's very festive of you. Merry Christmas. Make sure you do send in your score, though. Especially if you've never done it before. Wouldn't it be nice if we had some different names to read out? Not that I don't love the names I read out, and it is nice that people do it every episode, but you know, you could be someone new. I might even make a big thing about it going, oh, I've never read out this name before. Well, I've just said it now. It's not going to be that special if I do it again and there is a name to read out. Anyway, let's not dwell on the whole thing. I hope you did well. I hope you did better than me. No, I don't hope you did better than me. I hope you did the same as me, or just a slightly little bit lower. Yeah, next week it should be a bit easier because those were the difficult questions. Now, I'll tell you what the next quiz is about. The subject is, this is going to get you to tune in, isn't it? The subject is Christmas decorations. Everyone loves Christmas decorations. Be here for the next quiz to have 10 questions about Christmas decorations. But right now, boys and girls, send me a score, the email address, totalchristmas@gmail.com. Now we're doing this.
Do you hear what I hear?
As I sometimes have to tell Jack when I'm recording, I'm not slurring. I'm just speaking in cursive. I have to admit that the James Bond films are a bit of a guilty pleasure for me. The Oxford Dictionary defines guilty pleasure as something that one enjoys despite feeling that it is not generally held in high regard, which may be true of this film series. Many people will call them predictable or sexist, although we've been getting new films for over 50 years. Now, I agree, there's been a wide range of quality in these movies over time, but I feel like they always provide some form of entertainment. I mean, I like the double entendres. I like the luxury and the exotic locations. I like the specters and the skyfalls. I like the title songs and the action scenes. And I even like the ridiculous plots, the villains, and the Bond girls. Now, in terms of our favorite holiday, Her Majesty's Secret Service from 1969 is considered to be the James Bond Christmas movie. It is set during the season. It features snowy Swiss landscapes, Christmas trees, and decorations, and romantic holiday scenes. However, I want to focus on another Bond film, The World Is Not Enough, which isn't set at Christmas time. It does feature a 28-year-old Denise Richards. She plays a nuclear scientist named Christmas Jones, who looks like a supermodel and wears a tank top and hot pants. The film is best known for its stereotypical closing credits sex scene that is full of Christmas puns, including what is considered the most cringeworthy closing line in the whole film series. "I thought Christmas only comes once a year." This seems to be the only reason they named her Christmas, so they could use this joke at the end of the movie. And yet, I was taken in by another line delivered in the film. It's when M, who is the head of the UK spy network, M16, says to Bond about her old friend, Sir Robert King, "We read law at Oxford together." It was almost as if my "do you hear what I hear" spy signal was activated. They read law at Oxford? So what? I read about a lot of things every day. But I was thinking how red is used in the US, but not in the UK. In this case, M was saying that she and King had, using the term we would say in America, majored in law together. The verb read is being used here like we might say study. Now, how did red gain this association? Well, it turns out the old English word reden, which comes from the Proto-Germanic word redanan, means to explain or to reason. Despite the fact that words in many languages derive from the same root, this usage of the verb read in this form seems to be a particularly British expression. This original meaning of the word read seems only retained in British English, but lost in American English. Now, there is a crucial point that can't be overlooked. When one reads for a degree, it is different from a normal course of study in the US. It stems from how these subjects are traditionally taught in the UK, with a great deal of independent reading. Reading for a degree may involve a series of lectures, but it mostly consists of being assigned text by a reader who discusses what you have learned and requires essays to demonstrate logical argument and research. There's no classroom study as such. In British universities, a reader is an academic position, immediately below the level of professor. This is especially common when describing university study at Oxford and Cambridge. The bulk of the students' time went into reading, digesting what was read, and writing based on that reading. In addition, UK degrees tend to be a single course of study. In the British system, students are admitted to the university to study one subject and nothing else. So if you want to get a bachelor's degree in mathematics, every day you study mathematics. If a student is asked, "What are you studying?" or "What is your major?" it would be the same answer. This is a different approach than we have in America. So, when I tell you that I am reading Dickens, it is up to you to determine whether I am just flipping through his novels or studying him at Oxford. Dominus Illuminatio Mea. Cheers and Happy Christmas.
That's an interesting one, isn't it? I just assumed it sort of was just a term for reading, you know, it's like I always read. It's just a posh way of saying studying, but reading. No, there you go. Bob's got to the bottom of it and he sorted it out. Great work, Bob. Boys and girls, every episode I tell you to listen to Bob's podcast. I don't know if you are, but if you're not, go and do it. Do it now. Festive Foreign Film Fans. Easy to find. It's a great podcast. You'll learn something. Thanks again, Bob. You're a superstar. Now we're doing this. Okay, kids, we've discussed this. The jokes are bad, but they're jokes. Sort of. So this is this week's one. Are you ready? I've told you this before. I don't care if you're ready. Here comes the joke. What do you call it when Father Christmas is all cold and he warms himself by the fire? Santa thaws. Goodness.
I did something I shouldn't have, and these people called me on it.
You didn't.
That's pretty low, mister. If I had a rubber hose, I would beat you.
Boys and girls, I have a story of shame for you now. And this is a true story of shame. And what makes it really bad is that it happened to me. Now, boys and girls, as you know, I am a massive fan of Charlie Brown and Peanuts in general. I love it. Every single t-shirt that I wear has got Charlie Brown on it or possibly Snoopy. Every single t-shirt I wear, apart from my working t-shirts when I'm gardening. That would be sacrilege to wear a Charlie Brown t-shirt, getting it covered in mud. Anyway, I love Charlie Brown. At Christmas, on Christmas Eve, we went out to this deer park and they had a big family fun day and it was fantastic. And there was a guy there wearing a Snoopy knitted Christmas jumper, like a proper sweater, you know, knitted, not just a sweatshirt where it's printed on there. This was sewn into it. And I went up to him and I asked him where he got it from. And he told me. And as soon as I got back, I went online and tried to look for it. Couldn't find it. But suddenly, I did find another knitted sweater that had Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Sally Brown, and Lucy and Linus Van Pelt on it. I couldn't believe it. And it was like a Christmas tree in the middle. I saw it, and I fell in love straight away. I thought, that is the jumper I need. They had it in medium, my size. I bought it, and I was so happy. When I bought it, I realised I wasn't going to get it until after Christmas. But that was fine, because I loved this sweater so much. It didn't matter. I'd have it. It would be my possession, and come next Christmas, I'd be wearing it day in, day out. Well, boys and girls, that jumper arrived. And I ripped open the packaging, and I put it on, and it was super tight. Super tight. Like spandex tight. Yeah. And I looked at the label and it said medium, and then I suddenly realised that all my Christmas jumpers are large. And there was me. And I went and showed Carla, and she just looked at it and said, bit tight, isn't it? And I was like, I know. Oh. First thing I did was went online to see if I could find a large size. I couldn't. Then I looked to see if I could return it. I couldn't. They were a private seller. Having said that, looking at all their other listings, they're not a private seller. They're a business seller. If you're a business seller, you have to accept returns. If you're a private seller, you don't have to accept returns. So I'm stuck with this jumper. It's a glorious jumper. It just doesn't fit me. That's my story of shame, boys and girls. And I've still got it. In the bag. It's a lovely jumper. And then the other day, suddenly, it dawned on me that I could turn this awful, traumatic experience into a wonderful thing. I thought, why don't I offer the jumper to one of my lovely listeners? And all of a sudden, an awful thing becomes a wonderful thing. So, this jumper, I've explained it to you, it's glorious. It's red, it's got green stripes on it, and then at the front, knitted pattern, Christmas tree, either side of it, Charlie and Sally Brown, Snoopy in the middle, Lucy and Linus Van Pelt. It's a size medium. The dimensions are, pit to pit is 18 inches. The sleeve, that's the pit to cuff, that's about 18 inches as well. And from the collar to the bottom of the back hem is about 25 and a half inches. If you want this lovely jumper, pretty much you've got to be a little bit slimmer than me, a little bit smaller than me. If you want this jumper, don't just say, yeah, I'll take it, and then you've got a jumper that doesn't fit you just because you want a free jumper. Don't do that. I want this to go to one of my listeners that wants the jumper. It would probably fit a young lady perfectly. This is the first time in my life that I've actually wished I was a young lady. I'm not. I'm a grown man. The jumper's too small. I've got to get over it. I'm trying to get over it. It's a traumatic experience. If you want this jumper, all you have to do is email me with the answer to this very simple question. Recently, my daughters got some pet mice. Three of them. I have two daughters, they got a mouse each, I also got one. My oldest daughter called her mouse Potato, because there's a TV show called Chip and Potato, in which Potato is a mouse. Juno's mouse is called Cam, because she played a mouse in a play where her mouse was called Cam. They were called Cam and Bear. It was very funny. My mouse, this is the question, boys and girls. What is the name of my mouse? Now, you'll be there going, well, how am I supposed to guess that? I'll give you a clue. It's based on a character from Charlie Brown. That's a clue. But if you want to find out, all you have to do is listen to my daughter's podcast. It's called I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno. I've plugged it loads of times on the show. To be honest, you should be listening anyway, but I know you're not. I've got three listeners on this show. They've got two listeners on their show. And both of those are me trying to push the numbers up. Anyway, go on to that. Have a listen to some of the past episodes. They'll talk about their mice. They'll tell you the names of them. There you go. Not only do you get to listen to a great podcast, you find out the name of my mouse, and you can win a jumper, a glorious jumper that anyone would be proud to wear. So, when you're there emailing me in with your quiz score, After it, just put, oh, and I think your mouse is called whatever you think she's called. And that's it. I'm going to put the names in the hat. I say names in the hat. Probably only one person or even no one is going to bother going in for it. But I think you should. It's a great jumper. It is second hand. When I bought it, it was second hand. You wouldn't know that. You'd think it was brand new. It's in great condition. It looks fantastic. I'm not going to say how much it cost me. It wasn't super cheap. It wasn't that expensive either. But if you're overseas, it's going to cost me a lot to post it. I'm happy to spend that money knowing that it's going to go to a good home and someone's going to get to wear it. Anyway, that's this episode's story of shame. But let's not keep it as a story of shame. Let's make this a story of joy. It is Christmas after all. Send me that email. Now let's do this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation, I'm hoping I haven't already done this recently. It's possible I have, I've talked about it, but I hope I haven't talked about it. This episode's recommendation is a TV show called Taskmaster. And on it, I'm not going to go into all the people that present it and stuff, because if you're overseas, you've probably never heard of them. But you've got two presenters, one of them's a Taskmaster, and the other guy sort of sets the tasks. And you have like five comedians, they're not all comedians, some might just be TV presenters, but you've got five contestants. And over the series of like 8 or 9 episodes, they have to do lots of different little tasks. And it might be something silly, like throwing an ice cube into a glass from across a room, and seeing how quickly you can do that. Or it might be something quite elaborate, like making a video or something. I don't know. Anyway, it's a fantastic show. It's been going for years, and it's like 20... Actually, do you know what? The more I talk about it now, the more I feel like I have recommended this before. Well, there you go. That shows how good it is, doesn't it? I've been watching it. I haven't got through it all yet, but I'm still loving it. But recently, I bought a book, and also at a car boot sale, I bought a board game of Taskmaster. So me and the family have been playing Taskmaster. The girls love it. Well, Robin doesn't, because she's never won yet. Juno's won a few times. She's the youngest. I've won a few times. Carla's won once, I think. Anyway, point being, watch Taskmaster and then go and buy one of the board games. It's lots of fun for all the family. I know you'll love it. I hope I didn't recommend this before, but I'm sure I have. Taskmaster. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a huge thank you, of course, to Bob Baker and everyone who sent me their quiz scores. Don't forget to send in your quiz score this week. And also, don't forget to put your answers to the question to win the jumper if you want to win that jumper. If you want to get in touch, it's very straightforward. The email is totalchristmas@gmail.com. The website is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love ya. Merry, happy Christmas.